This is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown for March 10th, 2011. Today we examine the court challenge to the Plum Creek development plan. We speak with Phil Warden, the attorney who is arguing that the Land Use Regulatory Commission's final decision violates state rules. In the fall of 2008, the Land Use Regulatory Commission, or LURC, which oversees development proposals in Maine's unorganized territories, approved the largest development plan in the state's history. 5 years ago, Plum Creek Timber Company, which boasts it is the largest, most geographically diverse private landowner in the country, revealed a massive development project on its lands in the Moosehead Lake region. This plan includes close to 1,000 house lots and two large resorts. This development required the rezoning of close to 16,000 acres. Included in the proposal is setting aside approximately 400,000 acres for so-called conservation, though commercial logging and gravel and water extraction would be allowed there. The Land Use Regulatory Commission held extensive adjudicatory hearings on this project, at which time numerous recognized organizations were allowed to present their cases for or against the development, and then cross-examine other parties' arguments. In the end, LURC was not satisfied with Plum Creek's proposal and proceeded to make changes to it before they finally approved it. They did not, however, put this new proposal out to the process and parties for additional examination. Herein lies one of the main points of the suit now in court. The Forest Ecology Network and Restore the North Woods, with attorney Phil Warden, are demanding an appeal of LURC's decision. On February 24th, the Maine Superior Court heard final arguments on the merits of the case. We have with us today attorney Phil Warden. He is well known in Maine for his work on environmental and civil rights issues, is a member of the Maine and National Lawyers Guild, and a co-founder of the Mabel Wadsworth Women's Health Center. I would like to welcome to the program Phil Warden, attorney in Bar Harbor, who has been representing Restore the North Woods and the Forest Ecology Network in the Plum Creek case. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Meredith. It's a real pleasure to be here.
So we want to get to the actual proceedings in court that were just heard on February 24th. The merits of the case were heard. Is that correct?
It was the final hearing in the Superior Court on our appeal from the LURC decision granting the concept plan.
First, we'd like to lay the groundwork a little bit and talk about the concept plan. Remind listeners, though this was a very long and involved process that we did cover quite a lot here, what this concept plan ended up being, what LURC approved, and what that could still potentially look like.
Basically, Plum Creek went to LURC to ask them to do what's called a rezoning, to change the rules to allow it to do certain kinds of developments. Its argument was that it would also do certain kinds of conservation in exchange for the development rights. The point we constantly try to make is the entire concept plan area, which covers about 400,000 acres, is entirely commercial. There is no real conservation in terms of ecology, in our view. What it's divided into is two basic parts. One is conserves industrial forestry, which is a commercial activity. And the other area has a different kind of commercial activity, which are resorts and housing developments and things of that nature. But the entire 400,000 acres are going to be devoted to commercial activity, either industrial forestry or resort development.
And again, can you say what was the plan as far as resorts, housing lots, and that?
I forget the exact details, but there's like 1,000 house lots, two major resorts. There's going to be marinas. Some of the most controversial areas were in Lily Bay, a major resort there, up by Moose Bay. The other major aspect of the concept plan that is very controversial, which goes to the heart of it and was what Plum Creek really wanted, was that the concept plan not only gets passed, but that the LURC makes a contractually binding promise not to change that zoning for 30 years. In other words, Plum Creek locks itself in, so no matter what happens in the environment or what happens politically, where people, you know, the tendency is always to increase environmental protection as things get more and more ruined. And Plum Creek is immunizing itself from all social change for the next 30 years. So future commissions and future regulators will be stuck with the concept plan that was approved last year.
And again, you mentioned the conservation easements, and for some environmental groups and for Plum Creek itself in trying to sell this plan as something that was balanced. They talked about these conservation easements. Can you talk about that a little bit more and just
right.
what those were
what
and what
Plum
they're
Creek
not?
What Plum Creek basically said is we will give you these things that they call conservation easements in exchange for you giving us development rights and allow us to do developments that we wouldn't otherwise be allowed to do. What the so-called conservation easements do is primarily protect industrial forestry, but they also have all kinds of controversial aspects to them, such as 100 acres for spreading sludge from septic tanks and quarrying for various minerals, extracting water. They can do any kind of structures or buildings or roads that they need to, that as long as it's somehow related to their industrial forest operations. They do allow public access, and there's public access across timberlands anyway to get to Great Ponds under the Colonial Ordinance. But the public access things are all subordinate to the industrial forestry operation. So if the industrial forestry and the public access start to conflict, the industrial forestry prevails.
And there were a number of groups that did endorse this plan.
Yes, there was about 32 different parties in the LURC proceedings, and the vast majority of them endorsed it one way or the other. There were some that were only on very specific issues, you know, like guides or ATV and snowmobilers and things. They were only interested in limited aspects of it. But on the whole, there was several groups that we considered to be front groups, such as the Coalition to Preserve and Grow Northern Maine. And after the hearings were over, it was revealed that Plum Creek had given them a lot of money, and that they then used that money to spread around and kind of create support groups to make it look like there was a grassroots support for the concept plan.
These proceedings where the accepted, quote-unquote, interveners were allowed to present and then additionally cross-examine Plum Creek experts, and so a number of organizations like those that you represented, Forest Ecology Network, Restore the Northwoods, then the Natural Resources Council of Maine, and
Native Forest Network was very active.
Native Forest Network was very active. This was a very involved process with a lot of time given to this process, and one of the main aspects of the argument that those who are opposing the plan as it went through is that there were changes that were made after the approval that then the interveners are not being given the opportunity to examine in a public hearing setting. Can you talk about
sure.
that?
Sure. You have to remember this proceedings went on for years and years. What at the culmination, or what was supposed to be the culmination, was 4 solid weeks of what are called evidentiary hearings, where the various witnesses would appear and we would be able to cross-examine them. At the end of those hearings, what happened was is the commission agreed with us that Plum Creek had not made its case and that they could not grant the concept plan based on the evidence that occurred during the adjudicatory hearings. But the commission also decided that they didn't want to simply just deny Plum Creek. They thought they could salvage Plum Creek's proposal by changing it, by making various amendments to it. So what the commission did is they then authorized their staff to basically rewrite the concept plan in a way that would make it so the staff believed it was acceptable. The problem with this was, though, is this process, after the adjudicatory hearings were over, went on for a year and a half of the staff rewriting various aspects of the concept plan. If you consider, though, that what was actually happening during the adjudicatory hearings was, for instance, a Plum Creek expert would be testifying about how this was their concept plan was really good and didn't really affect wildlife, and we would cross-examine them to show that, yes, there was an impact on wildlife that they were understating. Once they started changing the plan after the adjudicatory hearings were over with, they started moving units and even resorts around. In other words, one example that we constantly use was that in Plum Creek's proposal, there was to be no resort at Moose Bay on Moosehead Lake. But staff decided on their own after the adjudicatory hearings were over that a resort would be appropriate for Moose Bay, and they made it what's called resort optional. So what our point then was, wait a minute, if you're going to put a resort at Moose Bay, when that was never considered at the adjudicatory hearings, there was never any cross-examination or anything to do with a resort at Moose Bay. And even if we'd had the foresight to foresee that this might happen. If we'd asked any of Plum Creek's witnesses about, is Moose Bay appropriate for a resort, they would have responded, we're not asking for a resort at Moose Bay, so it's not relevant to this hearing. But all that changed after the hearing, and this went on for a year and a half, so that the concept plan that was eventually voted on by the commission was fundamentally different than the concept plan that was exposed during the adjudicatory hearings. And LURC itself had agreed with us that based upon the evidence at the adjudicatory hearings, Plum Creek lost and did not make out its case. And they then took it upon themselves to rewrite the plan in order to make it approvable. And we not only objected to that, but we said, if you're going to do that, then you should at least reopen the adjudicatory hearings and give us a crack at it. And they said, oh, well, you don't really need to cross-examine. What questions would you ask? You know, the most obvious question is we would ask every one of Plum Creek's expert witnesses, isn't it true that the studies you did were not based on the concept plan that the commission ended up approving? And therefore, mm-hmm. all those studies and all that evidence that you introduced to show how good your plan was is now irrelevant and worthless because it's a different plan that's being adopted.
And let's underline that the point that you just made a little earlier is that LURC actually found that original plan to not be adequate. And,
right.
And so why didn't it stop there? And what did they not find adequate in that? How does that legally unfold where they're allowed to then?
Yep. Right. Our position is that they should vote it up or down based on the merits of the evidence that was introduced at the adjudicatory hearings. The commission decided not to do that, primarily because if they had to do that, they would have to vote no on it. And then they said they didn't want to put Plum Creek through the trouble of having to restart all this. They thought they had invested already so much time and effort through all these hearings that they didn't want to see it just die. The types of things that they found inadequate were very, very fundamental things. Top of the list is they found inadequate the amount of conservation that Plum Creek was proposing. Plum Creek had originally proposed what was called the balanced easement, which is about 90,000 acres, to balance its development requests. And the commission found that was inadequate and therefore by itself would be grounds to deny the concept plan. So one of the things they did when they were rewriting the plan is they combined what was called the balance easement with what was called the legacy easement, which was a different easement that it was selling to the Nature Conservancy. One of the big issues in the case and was brought up a bit in the oral argument in court was we said you cannot both sell development rights to the Nature Conservancy for $35 million and then turn around and say that those same development rights can be used as mitigation for your development.
Again, we're talking to Phil Warden. He is the attorney for Forest Ecology Network and Restore the North Woods, who are fighting to repeal the Land Use Regulatory Commission's approval of a massive development plan in the Moosehead Lake region, which would include 1,000 house lots and 2 large resorts. Were there some other glaring aspects to LURC's original problems with the plan that...
Sure. I mean, one of the things we were talking about was the enforceability of the conservation easements, which were very vaguely written. And so they made a lot of changes to those to try to put real meat into them. And also, you know, one of the things that the conservation easement had in it was a management advisory team that would kind of overview, look at it, but it was only advisory and Plum Creek could still do whatever it wanted. And they put some meat into that and required the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife to play an important role in the management advisory team and things like that. So, you know, staff did make some improvements because there were so many glaring problems that came out during the hearings. In our view, it was still inadequate. Because, you know, our view was there should be some real conservation of the environmental assets there, you know, like restoring it back to its natural state, because there's not very many places left, especially on the East Coast, that had that potential. And that industrial forestry may be an important part to the economy of Maine and may be worthy of some protection, but it's not the same as restoring the natural environment.
So LURC, though, did make this decision after they made these changes and then stated this as their decision.
They passed it unanimously.
Unanimously. 2 years ago now.
Right, and there was 4 or 5 people arrested during that process, and most of those charges were dropped.
And now you are in court, just as we said, on February 24th right. is the last. Can you talk about the case and about what aspects the judge has decided to hear and what aspects he's discounted and the crux of the argument that you're presenting?
Sure. Here? What we did is we appealed the decision into the Superior Court. The standard of review there is the Superior Court bases its decision solely on the record that was developed at the hearings. And LIRC specifically did not allow certain parts of the record in, specifically on the September 2 days of deliberations, where the commissioners deliberated over the pros and cons of the plan, was not presented to the court. So the first thing we had to do was put in a motion to try to get those materials in there. And we also put in a motion saying we needed additional evidence, because after the hearings concluded, information came out in the press about payments Plum Creek had made to various groups such as the Coalition, which we said basically what they were doing is they were using their financial resources to stack the deck by paying for phony groups to come in there, which would then cut into our cross-examination times, because it's much more difficult to do a hearing when there's 32 parties than if there's only like 5 or 6 parties. The court, however, in a preliminary ruling, denied both of our motions. And so it's not part of the official record of what happened during the deliberations, nor was there anything allowed in about the payments that Plum Creek had made. The issues that survived and that we argued about on the 24th was, first of all, our argument that LIRC does not have the statutory authority to bind future commissioners for 30 years by bargaining away its zoning things. The standard of review on that is the court is supposed to be quite deferential to LIRC's interpretation of its own statute. But what we pointed out was that statute unambiguously requires LIRC every 5 years to review its zoning, and then it's got a provision in there saying it must hold hearings pursuant to the terms for amending the zoning. And we said, how can LIRC every 5 years review its zoning and update it as need be if they've bargained that away to Plum Creek? The second part of the statute that we said was unambiguous is there's a part in there where citizens can petition LIRC to change the zoning. And we said by contracting away its ability to rezone for 30 years, they have effectively cut off that citizen right under the statute to petition for rezoning. And the judge seemed somewhat interested in that. The second issue that survived was our objection to using what was called the conservation framework, which was the $35 million sale of development rights to the Nature Conservancy, which the commission then later on, Plum Creek had never offered that as mitigation for its development. It had offered another easement called the balance easement. But the commission decided that they were going to require that and use that as mitigation for the development because there wasn't enough mitigation in the balance easement. And we said you can't both sell it to the Nature Conservancy and use it for mitigation. Plus, besides all that, the commission didn't really accomplish anything by combining those easements, because once the plan was approved, the sale to the Nature Conservancy was going to go through, and that conservation was going to happen anyway, insofar as you call it conservation. Mm-hmm. So they didn't add any conservation on, although they decided that the conservation was inadequate, and somehow by calling the conservation framework mitigation, that they somehow accomplished something. That was the second issue. The third issue had to do with the procedural aspects, which were very important, was the way that they had the adjudicatory hearings and then amended the plan and introduced and considered new evidence without reopening the adjudicatory hearings again and depriving us of our right of cross-examination. And the judge seemed very interested in that.
And again, the adjudicatory hearings, as we spoke earlier, were the long public hearings.
Right, they're formal, kind of like a trial where there's witnesses up there and they came in panels and we would take turns cross-examining the witnesses in order to kind of flesh out and show the weaknesses of the evidence and so that the commission could really understand the pros and cons of what was before it. That did not take place in the year and a half after the adjudicatory hearings when they made other decisions and considered other evidence. The most there would be called notice and comment proceedings.
And so the judge seemed interested in that aspect.
The judge seemed very interested in that aspect. The fourth one he also seemed very interested in, and that was our claim that the concept plan is inconsistent with the comprehensive land use plan that LIRC has already adopted, which is called the CLUP. And the CLUP says that the Moosehead area is an especially sensitive area and is in need of prospective zoning. Prospective zoning is a more advanced form of zoning that's kind of region-wide to take in an entire kind of ecosystem and zone for support for future instead of just waiting until bad things happen. And the club calls for that to happen in the Moosehead area. We had originally put in a request for a moratorium before LIRC until it could do the prospective zoning for the Moosehead area. What the commission did amazingly is in its decision, which is 186 pages long, is it decided that Plum Creek's concept plan was the equivalent of prospective zoning. And therefore, they not only adopted the concept plan, but they declared that the concept plan qualified as prospective zoning and therefore satisfied the CLEP requirement for prospective zoning. And the judge seemed very interested in that and saying, well, what's the difference between the concept plan and prospective zoning? And, we basically say there are two things. First of all, in the concept plan, because it's initiated by a single landowner, the landowner has an absolute veto over it. In other words, this concept plan could not go through once they started making their amendments. They had to make amendments that were satisfactory to Plum Creek, because if Plum Creek ever said no, they could withdraw the whole thing and the whole thing would collapse. That never occurs in real prospective zoning. In real prospective zoning, the public participates and it's what's in the public interest, whether the landowners like it or not. And mm-hmm. So that was one big difference. Another big difference, of course, is in real prospective zoning, you're dealing with a region-wide ecosystem, not just one landowner's property. So if you're talking about housing requirements, something like that, you would take into account the town of Greenville, and you'd be zoning for the town of Greenville, or at least the areas right around the town of Greenville. LIRC only has jurisdiction over the unorganized territories, but you would be taking in all the different aspects on a region-wide basis, which would include other landowners and other properties, so you could zone prospectively for based on the ecosystem and not just one single landowner. We had some more issues. Another issue was how they used a comparison of the build-out proceeding. A build-out is where you take an existing zoning system and you say, if everybody did everything that was allowed under this zoning, what would it look like? You kind of do a hypothetical build-out. Mm-hmm. And throughout these hearings, Plum Creek and the proponents always argued, saying, well, the existing zoning, if it went on for 30 years and everybody did everything they would be allowed to, it would be much worse. And they kept constantly saying against us that it's not a matter of, preserving the environment versus development. It's development versus development and what they kept calling haphazard development that would be allowed under the current zoning would be even worse than the kind of controlled development under the concept plan. And therefore, the concept plan is a good thing. And to which we would respond that, first of all, you're trashing your own zoning. It was you that wrote this zoning that you're now calling so haphazard, and all you have to do is change it. If you would put in prospective zoning, then you could solve all these problems by just doing what the CLEP says you're supposed to be doing. And second of all, to do the comparison, you can't compare something that's locked in for 30 years, like the concept plan, with the zoning, because the current zoning at least can be changed. And it's that very element of its changeability that makes it more protective of the environment than something that can't be changed for 30 years.
And so where does it seem that we're standing now with how the court is?
The court has taken our argument under advisement. It is a massive record. It's gigabytes and gigabytes of transcripts and all kinds of things. So the judge is going to take some time going through that. And then what I anticipate is he'll issue a written decision. And then the decision will come down. And I don't think he's going to have any more preliminary issues or anything. It's going to be a final decision up or down on our appeal. Following that, I anticipate whichever way he goes, because he's Superior Court, it'll go to the Maine Supreme Court. I'm pretty sure that Plum Creek will probably appeal if we win, and I know we will appeal if Plum Creek wins.
And meanwhile, developments by Plum Creek are on hold?
Yes.
Well, we have a few minutes left. I wanted to ask you about some related issues, but anything else that you want to add to the Plum Creek case?
I would just say, the most important thing from my mind has been the public support that we've gotten and the involvement of all the parties that participated in it. And I hope people will continue to follow this case, because it really makes a difference to have the amount of the public support for how important to the state of Maine the Moosehead region is, and that we can't just give up on it.
Thank you, Phil Warden. Again, we're talking with Phil Warden. I wanted to get your perspective on some of the proposed changes we're looking at in the Maine's environmental regulatory world, both coming from legislative proposals, but also from the governor's proposals that have come through in the LD1, and we're looking at possible rezoning of the Maine Woods for development, a much larger percentage of the Maine Woods, which would be open for development, a restructuring of LURC, an elimination of the Board of Environmental Protection. Some of these bodies that are, as we know, have been actually not necessarily geared towards the public, but are meant to be a conduit for public concerns. Can you talk about some of these movements that we're seeing in the state?
Sure. The specific things you mentioned, as I see them, are just one overall part of what I consider to be kind of an irrational right-wing backlash as a result of the November elections. And I think that's happening in other states as well as in Maine and at the federal level as well. But in Maine, the situation, I think, is especially acute, given Governor LePage's position. Some of his positions on LURC and the environment are pretty much irrational. I mean, they seem to be based on the assumption that the environmentalists always win and the businesses always lose, and so that they want to, you know, somehow make it easier on business, which is not exactly the experience that anyone who deals with any of this stuff has on there. But one of the changes he's proposed was to change the legal standards to make it easier to go into court and to flip the bureaucracy. Which is amazing, because that makes sense if you believe that the businesses always lose and the environmentalists always win, because then he wants the businesses to be able to go to court and reverse LURC decisions. But that may actually come back in sting, because it'll make it easier for us to go into court and flip LURC when LURC supports the businesses, which is what it most commonly does. It's not at all unusual in the area of regulatory things to have what we call where the industry captures the regulators. It's usually not through criminal activity or bribery or anything like that. It's their superior resources and their superior information that they can come up with the experts to make their case. And so the commissioners are often kind of strapped in, and the developers hire very good lawyers who come in and they present plans that match the regulations, and they're expert at the regulations. And then those regulations that occasionally we get in that are good, they then try to change. And that's one of the things that's happening with the governors. It seems to be almost a list from various business interests for how to streamline it for them.
Anything else that you would like to add? And we have just about a minute left.
Well, the only other thing I would add would be, in terms of that context, it strikes me that no longer can we see just these environmental issues as being separate. I think there's a backlash that's happening in terms of labor rights, the environment, women's rights, choice, abortion. It's on all fronts. My hope is, of course, that the right is going to overplay its hand, and that there'll be a reaction from us that'll come back, and we'll come back stronger. And it may be that we'll come out better off on this. If we don't, and that doesn't happen, Maine is in for some very dark times.
Well, Phil Worden, we thank you very much for joining us today, and we hope to have you back as the Plum Creek proceedings unfold, and we'll see what the next steps are.
Thanks. I love Radioactive.
Great. Thank you, Phil. You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown. You can listen to archives of this and other local public affairs on weru.org. Thank you for listening and acting.